Chapter 7. When Mushkin ceased speaking, they were all looking at him gaily, even Aglaya, and particularly Lizaveta Prokofievna. "Well, they have put you through your examination," she cried. "Well, young ladies, you thought you were going to patronize him as a poor relation, but he scarcely deigns to accept you, and only with the proviso that he won't come often. It makes us look silly, especially Ivan Fyodorovitch. Then I am glad of it. Bravo, Prince! We were told to put you through an examination. And as for what you said about my face, it's perfectly true. I am a child, and I know it. I knew that before you told me. You put my own thoughts into words for me. I believe your character's like mine exactly, like two drops of water, and I am glad of it. Only you are a man, and I am a woman, and haven't been to Switzerland. That's the only difference."
"Don't be in a hurry, Maman," cried Aglaya. "The prince admitted that he had a special motive in all he has confessed, and was not speaking simply." "Yes, yes," laughed the others.
"Don't tease him, my dears. He is shrewder, maybe, than all the three of you together. You will see. But why do you say nothing about Aglaya, Prince? Aglaya is waiting, and so am I."
"I can't say anything at once. I'll speak later."
"Why?
I shouldn't have thought she couldn't be overlooked."
"Oh, no, she couldn't. You are exceedingly beautiful, Aglaya Ivanovna, but are so beautiful that one is afraid to look at you."
"Is that all? What about her qualities?" Madame Epanchin persisted.
"It's difficult to judge beauty. I'm not ready yet. Beauty is a riddle."
"That's as good as setting Aglaya a riddle," said Adelaida. "Guess it, Aglaya." "But she is beautiful, Prince."
"Extremely," answered the prince with warmth, looking enthusiastically at Aglaya. "Almost as beautiful as Nastasia Philipovna, though her face is quite different." All looked at one another in surprise.
"Has who?" gasped Madame Epanchin. "Has Nastasia Philipovna? Where have you seen Nastasia Philipovna? What's Nastasia Philipovna?"
"Gavril Ardalionovitch was showing her portrait to Ivan Fyodorovitch just now."
"What? He brought Ivan Fyodorovitch her portrait?"
"To show it to him. Nastasia Philipovna had given it to Gavril Ardalionovitch today, and he brought it to show."
"I want to see it," Madame Epanchin cried eagerly. "Where is the photograph? If it was given him, he must have got it. He must still be in the study. He always comes to work on Wednesdays and never leaves before four. Call him at once." "No, I am not dying to see him. Do me a favour, dear prince. Go to the study. Take the photograph from him and bring it here. Tell him we want to look at it, please."
"He is nice, but too simple," said Adelaida when the prince had gone.
"Yes, somewhat too much so," Alexandra agreed. "So that it makes him a little absurd, in fact." Neither of them seemed to be saying all she thought.
"He got out of it very well, though, over our faces," said Aglaya. "He flattered us all, even Mama."
"Don't be witty, please," cried her mother. "He did not flatter me, though I was flattered."
"You think he was sly?" asked Adelaida. "I fancy he is not so simple."
"Get along with you," said her mother, getting angry. "To my thinking, you are more absurd than he is. He is simple, but he's got all his wits about him, in the most honourable sense, of course. Exactly like me."
"It was certainly a mistake to have spoken about the photograph," Mushkin reflected, as he went to the study, feeling a little conscience-stricken. "But perhaps it was a good thing I spoke of it." A strange, though still vague, idea was beginning to take shape in his mind. Gavril Ardalionovitch was still sitting in the study, absorbed in his papers. It was clear he did not receive his salary from the company for nothing. He was terribly disconcerted when the prince asked him for the portrait, and told him how they had come to hear about it.
"Ugh! What need had you to chatter about it?" he cried in angry vexation. "You know nothing about it!"
"Idiot!" he muttered to himself.
"I'm sorry. I did it without thinking. It happened to come up. I said that Aglaya was almost as handsome as Nastasia Philipovna."
Ganya begged him to tell him exactly what had happened. Mushkin did so. Ganya looked at him sarcastically again.
"You've got Nastasia Philipovna on the brain," he muttered, but paused and sank into thought.
He was evidently upset. Mushkin reminded him of the photograph.
"Listen, Prince,"
Ganya said suddenly, as though an idea had struck him. I want to ask a great favour of you. But I really don't know. He broke off, embarrassed. He seemed struggling with himself and trying to make up his mind. Mushkin waited in silence. Ganya scanned him once more with intent and searching eyes. Prince, he began again. They are angry with me now, in there, owing to a strange and absurd incident for which I am not to blame. In fact, there's no need to go into it. I think they are rather vexed with me in there, so that for a time I don't want to go in without being invited. But there is something I absolutely must say to Aglaya Ivanovna. I have written a few words on the chance. He held a tiny folded note in his hand, and I don't know how to give it to her. Won't you take it for me and give it to her at once, but to Aglaya Ivanovna alone, so that no one sees it? You understand? It's no very terrible secret, nothing of that sort, but will you do it? I don't quite like doing it, answered Mushkin. Oh, Prince, it's horribly important for me, Ganya began entreating him. She will perhaps answer. Believe me, it's only at the last extremity. At the last extremity that I could have recourse to. But whom else could I send it? It's very important. Dreadfully important. Ganya was terribly afraid that Mushkin would not consent, and looked in his eyes with cringing entreaty. Very well, I'll give it to her. Only see that no one sees it, Ganya besought him, delighted. And another thing. I can rely on your word of honour, of course, Prince. I won't show it to anyone, said Mushkin. The note is not sealed, but Ganya was beginning in his anxiety, but he broke off in confusion. Oh, I won't read it, answered Mushkin quite simply. He took the photograph and went out of the study. As soon as Ganya was left alone, he clutched at his head. One word from her, and I will break it off, perhaps. He could not settle down to his papers again for excitement and suspense, and began pacing from one corner of the room to the other. Mushkin pondered as he went. The task laid upon him impressed him unpleasantly. The thought of a letter from Ganya to Aglaya was unpleasant, too. But when he was the length of two rooms from the drawing-room, he stopped short, as though recollecting something. He looked round, went to the window nearer to the light, and began looking at the portrait of Nastasia Philipovna. He seemed trying to decipher something that had struck him before, hidden in that face. The impression it had made had scarcely left him, and now he was in a hurry to verify it again. He was now even more struck by the face, which was extraordinary from its beauty and from something else in it. There was a look of unbounded pride and contempt, almost hatred in that face, and at the same time something confiding, something wonderfully simple-hearted. The contrast of these two elements roused a feeling almost of compassion. Her dazzling beauty was positively unbearable, the beauty of a pale face, almost sunken cheeks and glowing eyes. A strange beauty. Mushkin gazed at it for a minute, then started suddenly, looked round him, hurriedly raised the portrait to his lips, and kissed it. When he walked into the drawing-room a minute later, his face was perfectly calm. But he had hardly entered the dining-room, which was separated by one room from the drawing-room, when he almost ran against Aglaya, who was coming out. She was alone. "Gavril Ardalionovitch asked me to give you this," said Mushkin, handing her the note. Aglaya stood still, took the note, and looked strangely at Mushkin. There was not the slightest embarrassment in her expression. There was only a shade of wonder in her eyes, and that seemed only in reference to Mushkin. Aglaya's eyes seemed to ask him to account for having got mixed up in this affair with Ganya, and to ask him calmly and haughtily. They looked at one another for 2 or 3 seconds. Then something ironical seemed to come into her face. With a slight smile, she walked away. Madame Epanchin gazed for some moments in silence with a shade of nonchalance at the photograph of Nastasia Philipovna, which she held affectedly at arm's length.
"Yes, good-looking," she pronounced at last. "Very good-looking indeed. I've seen her twice, only at a distance." "That's the sort of beauty you appreciate, then," she suddenly said to Mushkin.
"Yes, it is," answered Mushkin with some effort.
"You mean just that sort of beauty?"
"Just that sort."
"Why?"
"In that face, there is so much suffering," answered Mushkin, as it were involuntarily speaking to himself, not in answer to her question.
"But perhaps you are talking nonsense," Madame Epanchin concluded, and with a haughty gesture she flung the photograph down on the table.
Alexandra took it. Adelaida went up to her, and they looked at it together. At that moment, Aglaé came back into the drawing-room.
"What power!"
Adelaida cried suddenly, looking eagerly over her sister's shoulder at the portrait.
"Where? What power?"
her mother asked sharply.
"Such beauty is power," said Adelaida warmly. "With beauty like that, one might turn the world upside down."
She walked thoughtfully away to her easel. Aglaé only glanced cursorily at the portrait, screwed up her eyes, pouted, walked away and sat down clasping her hands. Madame Epanchin rang the bell.
"Call Gavriil Ardalionovitch here. He is in the study," she told the servant who answered it.
"Maman," cried Alexandra significantly. "I want to say a few words to him. That's enough,"
her mother snapped out, cutting short her protest. She was evidently irritated.
"We have nothing but secrets here, Prince, you see. Nothing but secrets. It has to be so. It's a sort of etiquette. It's stupid. And in a matter which above everything needs frankness, openness, and straightforwardness, there are marriages being arranged. I don't like these marriages."
"Maman, what are you saying?"
Alexandra again made haste to check her.
"What is it, dear daughter? Do you like it yourself? As for the prince's hearing it, we are friends. He and I are, anyway. God seeks men, good ones, of course, but he does not want the wicked and capricious. Capricious especially, who say one thing one day and something else another. Do you understand, Alexandra Ivanovna? They say I am queer, Prince, but I can tell what people are like. For the heart is the great thing, and the rest is all nonsense. One must have sense, too, of course. Perhaps sense is the great thing, really. Don't smile, Aglaé. I am not contradicting myself. A fool with a heart and no sense is just as unhappy as a fool with sense and no heart. It's an old truth. I am a fool with a heart and no sense, and you are a fool with sense and no heart, and so we are both unhappy and miserable."
"What are you so unhappy about, Maman?"
Adelaida could not resist asking. She seemed the only one of the company who had not lost her good humour.
"Learned daughters, in the first place," retorted her mother curtly. "And as that's enough of itself, there's no need to go into other causes. Words enough have been wasted. We shall see how you two—I don't count Aglaé—will manage with your sense and your talk, and whether you will be happy with your fine gentleman, most admirable Alexandra Ivanovna." "Ah!" she exclaimed, seeing Ganya enter. "Here comes another matrimonial alliance. Good day," she said, in response to Ganya's bow, without asking him to sit down.
"You are contemplating marriage?"
"Marriage? How, what marriage?" muttered Gavriil Ardalionovitch, dumbfounded. He was terribly disconcerted.
"Are you getting married, I ask you, if you prefer that expression?"
No, Gavriil Ardalionovitch lied, and a flush of shame overspread his face. He stole a glance at Aglaé, who was sitting a little apart, and hurriedly looked away again. Aglaé looked coldly, intently, and calmly at him, steadily watching his confusion.
"No? You said no?" the ruthless lady persisted. "Enough! I shall remember that today, Wednesday morning, you have said no in answer to my question. What is today? Wednesday?"
"I think so, Maman," answered Adelaida.
"They never know the days. What day of the month is it?"
The 27th, answered Ganya.
"The 27th. Just as well, for some reasons. Goodbye. I think you've a great deal to do, and it's time for me to dress and go out. Take your photograph. Give my kind regards to your unhappy mother. Goodbye for the present, dear Prince. Come and see us often. I'm going to see old Princess Bielokonski on purpose to tell her about you. And listen, my dear, I believe it's simply for my sake God has brought you to Petersburg from Switzerland. Perhaps you may have other work to do, but it was chiefly for my sake. That was just God's design. Goodbye, dears. Alexandra, come to my room, my dear.
Madame Epanchin went out. Gania, crestfallen, confused, angry, picked up the photograph from the table and turned with a wry smile to Mushkin. Prince, I'm just going home. If you've not changed your mind about boarding with us, I will take you, for you don't even know the address.
Stay a little, Prince, said Eglaire, suddenly getting up from her chair. You must write in my album. Papa said you had a fine handwriting. I'll bring it to you directly.
And she went out.
Goodbye for the present, Prince. I'm going too, said Adelaida.
She pressed Mushkin's hand warmly, smiling kindly and cordially to him, and went away. She did not look at Gania.
That was your doing, snarled Gania, falling upon Mushkin as soon as everyone had gone. You've been babbling to them of my getting married, he muttered in a rapid whisper, with a furious face and an angry gleam in his eyes. You're a shameless chatterbox.
I assure you, you are mistaken, Mushkin answered calmly and politely. I didn't even know you were going to be married.
You heard Ivan Fyodorovich say this morning that everything will be settled tonight at Nastasia Filipovna's. You repeated it. You are lying.
From whom could they have found out?
Damn it all.
Who could have told them except you? Didn't the old woman hint it to me?
You must know best who told them, if you really think they hinted at it. I haven't said a word about it.
Did you give the note?
An answer? Gania interrupted with feverish impatience. But at that very moment, Aglaya came back, and Mushkin hadn't time to answer.
Here, Prince, she said, laying the album on the table. Choose a page and write me something. Here is a pen, a new one, too. You don't mind its being a steel one. I hear that calligraphists never use steel pens.
Talking to Mushkin, she seemed not to notice Gania's presence. But while the prince was fixing his pen, looking for a page and making ready, Gania went up to the fireplace where Aglaya was standing, on Mushkin's right hand. With a quavering, breaking voice, he said almost in her ear,
"One word. One word only from you, and I am saved."
Mushkin turned round quickly and looked at them both. There was real despair in Gania's face. He seemed to have uttered those words in desperation without thinking. Aglaya looked at him for a few seconds with exactly the same calm wonder with which she had looked on the prince. And this calm wonder, this surprise, as though she were completely at a loss to understand what was said to her, seemed more terrible to Gania at that moment than the most withering contempt.
"What am I to write?" asked Mushkin. "I will dictate to you," said Aglaya, turning to him. "Are you ready? Write, 'I don't make bargains.' Then write the day and the month. Show me."
Mushkin handed her the album.
"Excellent! You've written it wonderfully. You have an exquisite handwriting. Thank you. Goodbye, Prince. Stay," she added, as though suddenly recollecting something. "Come along. I want to give you something for a keepsake."
Mushkin followed her, but in the dining room Aglaya stood still.
"Read this," she said,
handing him Gania's note. Mushkin took the note and looked wonderingly at Aglaya.
"I know you haven't read it, and that man cannot have confided in you. Read it. I want you to read it."
The note had evidently been written in haste.
"Today my fate will be decided. You know in what way. Today I must give my word irrevocably. I have no claim on your sympathy. I dare not have any hope. But once you uttered a word, one word, and that word lighted the dark night of my life and has been my beacon ever since. Speak one such word again now, and you will save me from ruin. Only say to me, 'Break off everything,' and I will break it all off today. Oh, what will it cost you to say that? That word I only ask for is a sign of your sympathy and compassion for me. Only that, nothing more, nothing. I dare not dream of hope, for I am not worthy of it. But after a word from you, I can accept my poverty again. I shall joyfully endure my hopeless lot. I shall face the struggle. I shall be glad of it. I shall rise up again with renewed strength. Send me that word of sympathy. Only sympathy, I swear. Do not be angry with the audacity of a desperate and drowning man for making a last effort to save himself from perdition. G.I.
This man assures me, said Aglaya abruptly, when Mushkin had finished reading it, that the words 'break it all off' will not compromise me, and will bind me to nothing, and gives me a written guarantee of it, as you see in this note. Observe how naively he hastened to underline certain words, and how coarsely his secret thought shows through it. Yet he knows that if he broke it all off of himself, without a word from me, without even speaking of it to me, without expecting anything from me, I should have felt differently to him, and perhaps might have become his friend. He knows that for a fact. But he has a dirty soul. He knows it, but can't bring himself to it. He knows it, but still he asks for a guarantee. He can't act on faith. He wants me to give him hope of my hand, to make up for the 100,000. As for my words in the past, of which he speaks in his note, and which he says have lighted up his life, it's simply an insolent lie. I merely pitied him once. But he is insolent and shameless. He had once conceived a notion that hope was possible for him. I saw it at once. Since then he has begun trying to catch me. He is trying to catch me even now. But enough. Take the note and give it back to him as soon as you are out of the house. Not before, of course.
And what answer am I to give him?
Nothing, of course. That's the best answer. So you are going to live in his house?
Ivan Fyodorovich himself advised me to this morning, said Mushkin.
Then be on your guard with him, I warn you. He won't forgive you for taking him back his note.
Aglaya pressed Mushkin's hand lightly and walked away. Her face was grave and frowning. She did not even smile when she bowed to him at parting.
I'm just coming. I'll only get my bundle, said Mushkin to Ganya. Then we will go.
Ganya stamped with impatience. His face looked black with fury. At last, both went out into the street, Mushkin with his bundle in his hand.
The answer! The answer! Cried Ganya, pouncing upon him. What did she say to you? Did you give her the letter?
Mushkin gave him the note without a word. Ganya was petrified.
What? My letter? He cried. He didn't give it to her. Oh, I might have expected it. Oh, damnation! I see how it was she didn't understand just now. But how could you? How could you fail to give it? Oh, damn!
Excuse me, on the contrary. I succeeded in giving your note at once, the very minute you'd given it to me, and exactly as you asked me to. It's in my hands again because Aglaya Ivanovna gave it back to me just now.
When? When?
As soon as I had finished writing in her album, when she called me. You heard her. We went into the dining room. She gave me the note, told me to read it, and to give it to you back.
To read it? Ganya shouted almost at the top of his voice. To read it? You've read it?
And in amazement he stood stock still again in the middle of the pavement, so astounded that he positively gaped.
Yes, I've just read it.
And she gave it you? Gave it you herself to read? Herself?
Yes. And I assure you I shouldn't have read it unless she'd asked me to.
Ganya was silent for a minute, reflecting with painful effort. But suddenly he cried,
Impossible! She couldn't have told you to read it. You are lying! You read it of yourself!
I'm speaking the truth, answered Mushkin in the same perfectly untroubled voice. And I assure you I am very sorry that it is so distasteful to you.
But, you luckless creature! She must have said something at the time. Surely she made some answer.
Yes, of course.
Tell me, then, tell me! Oh, damn it!
And Ganya twice stamped his right foot, wearing a galosh on the pavement.
When I'd finished reading it, she told me that you were trying to catch her, that you wanted to compromise her so that she might give you hopes of her hand, and that, secure of that, you wouldn't lose by abandoning your hopes of 100,000, that if you had done so without bargaining with her and had broken it off without asking for a guarantee from her beforehand, she would perhaps have become your friend. I believe that's all. Oh, something more. When I asked, after I'd taken the letter, what was the answer, she said that no answer was the best answer. I think that was it. You must excuse me if I've forgotten her exact words, and only repeat it as I understood it.
Ganya was overcome by intense anger, and his fury burst out without restraint. Oh, so that's it, he snarled. So my notes are thrown out of the window. Oh, she won't make bargains, then I will, and we shall see. I have other things to fall back upon. We shall see. I'll make her smart for it.
His face was pale and distorted. He foamed at the mouth. He shook his fist. So they walked for some steps. He behaved exactly as though he were alone in his room and made no attempt to keep up appearances before Mushkin, as though he looked upon him as absolutely of no consequence. But suddenly he reflected and pulled himself up. "But how is it?" he said suddenly, addressing Mushkin. "How is it you, an idiot," he added to himself, "are suddenly trusted with such confidence after 2 hours' acquaintanceship? How is it?" Envy was all that was wanted to complete his suffering, and it suddenly stung him to the heart.
"That I can't explain," answered Mushkin.
Gania looked wrathfully at him. "Was it to make you a present of her confidence that she called you into the dining room? She was going to give you something."
"That's just how I understand it."
"But damn it all, why? What have you done? How have you won their hearts? Listen." He was violently agitated and in a terrible ferment. All his ideas seemed hopelessly scattered. "Listen, can't you remember what you've been talking about, every word from the beginning, and give some sort of account of it? Don't you remember noticing anything?"
"Certainly I can," answered Mushkin. "At the beginning, when I first went in and made their acquaintance, we began talking about Switzerland."
"Confound Switzerland!"
"Then we talked of capital punishment."
"Capital punishment?"
"Yes, something suggested it. Then I told them how I spent 3 years out there, and the story of a poor village girl."
"Damn the poor village girl! What else?"
Gagne was raging with impatience. "Then how Schneider told me his opinion of my character, and how he forced me to..."
"Hang Schneider and damn his opinion of you! What else?"
"Then something led up to my speaking of faces, or rather of the expression of faces, and I said that Aglaya Ivanovna was almost as beautiful as Nastasia Philipovna, and that was how I came to mention the portrait."
"But you didn't repeat... you didn't repeat what you heard this morning in the study?" "You didn't. You didn't."
"I tell you again, I did not."
"How the devil that..." "Did Aglaya show the note to the old lady?"
"I can assure you positively that she did not do that. I was there all the while, and she hadn't the time to."
"But perhaps you missed something. Oh, damned idiot!" he exclaimed, completely beside himself. "He can't even tell anything properly!" Gania, having once begun to be abusive and meeting no resistance, lost all restraint, as is always the case with certain sorts of people. A little more, and he would have begun to spit, he was so furious. But his fury made him blind, or he would have understood long ago that this idiot, whom he was treating so rudely, was sometimes rather quick and subtle in understanding, and could give an extremely satisfactory account of things. But something unexpected happened all at once. "I must tell you, Gavril Ardalionovitch," Mushkin said suddenly, "that I was once so ill that I really was almost an idiot. But I've got over that long ago, and so I rather dislike it when people call me an idiot to my face. Though I can excuse it in you, in consideration of your ill luck, but in your vexation you've been abusive to me twice already. I don't like that at all, especially so suddenly at first acquaintance. And so, as we are just at the crossroads, hadn't we better part? You go to the right to your home, and I go to the left. I've got 25 rubles, and I shall be sure to find some lodging-house." Gania was dreadfully disconcerted, and even flushed with shame at meeting with such an unexpected rebuff.
"Excuse me, Prince," he cried warmly, dropping his offensive tone for one of extreme politeness. "For mercy's sake, forgive me. You see what trouble I'm in. You know scarcely anything of it as yet, but if you knew all, I am sure you would feel there was some excuse for me. Though, of course, it is inexcusable."
"Oh, I don't need so much apology," Mushkin hastened to answer. "I understand that it's very horrid for you, and that's why you are rude. Well, let's go to your house. I'll come with pleasure."
"No, I can't let him go like that now," Gania was thinking to himself, looking resentfully at Mushkin on the way. "The rogue got it all out of me, and then removed his mask. There's something behind it. But we shall see. Everything will be decided. Everything. Today."
They were by now standing opposite the house.